Risky Business, your weekly security briefing with Patrick Gray. Sponsored by Verizon Business Security Solutions, powered by CyberTrust.
Hello and welcome to the 38th edition of Risky Business, with thanks to our hosting partner Vigabyte and of course our sponsor Verizon Business Security Solutions. On this week's show, we'll be taking a look at Apple's new operating system, Leopard. We've brought on Matthew J.C. Powell, editor of Australian Macworld, to deliver the verdict on the new supposedly secure operating system. And it's not a pretty verdict, let me tell you. We'll also be joined on the line by Henry Ng from Verizon Business Security Solutions, our sponsor. He phoned in from Hong Kong to discuss the Asian market's approach to security. Apparently, it's way too product-centric. That interview's coming up later. But first, as always, we're joined by ZDNet Australia's editor, Munir Katadia, with a look at that company's security news headlines. Munir, I love this story about the storm worm or the storm malware.
Yeah,
because it seems the IT press is reporting on Storm like it's a commercial product.
Well, it is a commercial product, really, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it definitely is a commercial product, but they're reporting on it almost like it's the latest version of Office.
Oh, but look, these guys are treating it so much better than that when you talk about the malware also here. Now, what have they done? They've streamlined the worm. They've actually removed some functions and made it, you know, a bit leaner, a bit meaner, a bit easier to replicate. I mean, these guys are really on their cycles here. They're improving this every week, it seems.
Yeah, no, I think I wrote in a blog post a while ago that... that, you know, Storm was that bit of malware that we all feared would come along one day when the bad guys got their shit together. And, you know, they definitely have. And it's, you know, we're getting reports. Let me just read the first paragraph to this story. The Storm worm is now more streamlined and stable after malware authors ditched some key functions from the malicious code, according to researchers from Symantec.
Yeah, it says it no longer infects other legitimate drivers on the system, instead relying on its own proprietary components to do its dirty work. No open source there, matey.
Yeah, no open source for these guys, you know. It's funny, isn't it? Like, but, yeah, it just seems Storm just keeps chugging along, getting better. I mean, there was that story a few weeks ago about how they'd broken it off into different sections using 40-bit keys.
That's right. So I assume that this is just, you know, particular versions of it that, you know, somebody you may want to hire and use for particular purposes. So I don't know exactly what having a more streamlined version will do, but I got a feeling that, you know, maybe they've got different products on the market now.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to be happy anyway, the outcome of that. But, now, on to the next story. This is an interesting little proposition and one that we have heard before. But Paul Ducklin from Sophos, who's the head of technology for that company, says that, you know, seeing heaps of malware out there is actually a good sign.
Yeah, that's right. He was talking about this new Trojan horse, which has crashed into the top three based email threats. And he's saying that, yeah, because there's basically the criminals are having to try much harder and use lots and lots of different ways. And so they're flooding the place. If there was an easy way to get in, an easy way to infect everyone, then they wouldn't have to try so hard.
Yeah, and I don't think you can really fault that logic. I mean, he's saying basically that, you know, you need, in order to infect systems out there, these guys need to have about 6 million tools in their toolbox and, you know, really throw their net quite wide to try to infect systems. So it's just an interesting little thesis, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But you know what? One thing is that it doesn't seem like there's any fewer people being infected. So they're spreading their net wide enough, it seems.
Yeah. So that's just an interesting little thought piece there. All right, now, Westpac has said that SMS authentication doesn't help security. Now, of course, Westpac doesn't use SMS authentication. And it used a bit of a tech conference to take a swipe at its rivals who do use SMS-based stuff, which is, of course, more expensive than token-based authentication, which they do use.
Yeah, I think what Westpac's saying here is that, you know, the SMS thing, it's actually more for the users to feel safer rather than actually be safe.
I completely disagree with that.
Yeah?
Because really, I use Commonwealth Bank's SMS-based authentication, and I find that it's, I can't really think of a simple way around it. It's true two-factor out-of-band authentication.
I do like it, and I just signed up for it actually about a week or two ago, and I used it once, and it was pretty quick, and it was useful. Yeah, this does improve it a bit. Does it make me safer than a couple of weeks ago? I don't know. I don't know how much safer it does make me. And
well,
what happens now if I lose my mobile phone? You know, it suddenly makes it far more inconvenient.
Yeah. I mean, look, that is one definitely valid point. Or if you're traveling and they don't want to authenticate, you know, if you're in bloody touring through Botswana, whatever you're doing there, I don't know.
Yeah.
But you're wandering through the jungle and decide you stumble across an internet cafe. Okay, this analogy's starting to fall down, right? Because you're not going to stumble across an internet cafe in the jungle in Botswana.
But, you never know.
But you might be, okay, backpacking through Thailand. How's
yeah.
that? And you go into an internet cafe, you go to pay your rent to your landlord's new account or something, and you don't have your mobile phone, so you're kind of up the proverbial creek without a paddle, aren't you?
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I guess with all security, you kind of like compromise. You go give away your flexibility to improve your security, and that was one of the moves. Yeah, I think it makes a marginal difference. I think it does, but I kind of agree with him, but then again, I don't.
If it is indeed the case that SMS authentication is being used more as a marketing ploy than anything else, I think it really does prove the point that security has become, you know, an issue that is very much at the forefront of consumers' minds. If banks are prepared to spend, you know, significant amounts of money deploying technologies which are simply there to make users feel better, I mean, that really says something, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. And we know that they're probably the least likely to put their hands in their wallets unless they absolutely desperately have to. So,
now, here's an interesting story by Liam Tung, who's one of your minions
yep.
at ZDNet Australia. And you can read these stories at zdnet.com.au. Call centre employees are apparently more dangerous than fishers.
Yeah, what this guy is saying here, this is again from the FT event that happened a little while ago. And they're saying that, okay, so you got phishers, you know, who send out these emails and try and fool people and then you get your details that way. But if you get somebody in, infiltrate a call center, then you've got loads of information there and there's people, you know, taking pictures of screens and getting data that way. And it seems a far easier way to harvest far more details than actually having to go and, you know, go down the malware route.
Yeah, now this was Ian Johnston, who's the fraud specialist at JP Morgan Chase Asia Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess another point that he was making is it's these call centres in, you know, really poor countries. Really, so you're basically paying someone bugger all to come in and, you know, shuffle quite large dollar amounts around for rich Westerners. And, you know, I suppose the temptation in that sort of economy for people to conduct fraud is always going to be greater, isn't it?
Yeah, and the other issue there is, you know, he says that they really try and tighten their hiring process, but when you're taking on between 200 and 600 people on a regular basis, a monthly, it says between 200 and 600 recruits, that's a lot of people to try and, you know, get through and pick out the good ones.
Yeah, and he says these guys have been found taking screenshots with their mobile phones, or they've been writing texts at incredible speed under their desks while they're talking to people. So they're getting quite good at it. And,
yeah.
You know, they're talking about locations like India, the Philippines, Indonesia and Ethiopia. But, I mean, even if you're dealing with somewhere in Australia, I can imagine that it would be tempting for some bad apples to get in there and start siphoning data off if there's money in it.
Yep, totally. I mean, you know, it does seem, the more I think about it, the more I think it makes a lot more sense, yeah. I'm sure they use it as a backup with their phishing emails as well, though.
One of the funny things they said was about the in Indonesia, if you wanted to report something to the Indonesian police, you had to pay them $10,000 to secure an arrest.
It's a joke, though, isn't it?
It's a user-pay system, you know. I'm
yeah.
surprised the Howard government hasn't embraced that, because they're all about user-pays.
Don't, come on, no more ideas just before the election.
No more ideas just before the election, you're right. You know, if they get Senate majority again next time, we could be seeing that. But I have to say, you know, I have spent considerable amounts of time in Indonesia, and I'm telling you, if you're paying $10,000 to get someone arrested, you're being ripped off. You can do it for much less than that.
I guess if you say you're from JP Morgan Chase, then I guess they don't worry about that and just add an extra zero or two.
Now, another virtualization story, of course, virtualization being one of the biggest issues to hit security in 2007.
Yeah.
Virtualization is apparently not trusted for critical apps, but we have to keep in mind this is information coming from a vendor survey.
Yeah, that's right. It's a semantic survey, I believe. And what they're saying is that 20% of respondents said they would consolidate, you know, their servers if they were mission critical. So it was only 20%, whereas 60% said they're happy to virtualize, you know, just relatively unimportant or ones that are used for R&D. I don't know, but I think that's the interesting thing here. You know, 20%, if they said, okay, this is mission-critical application, then they're not willing to use virtualization, which kind of makes a bit of sense, you know? I mean, it's been around a while. I still don't know how much I trust it.
It's just, I think, you know, these surveys are really good to get a bit of a barometer, but, you know, I think people out there with virtualization are pretty much just doing their own thing, and there doesn't seem to be a standard way of approaching this stuff, which is, I suppose, why you can find 20% of people preparing to do it, who are prepared to do it, and 80% who aren't.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'd like to see what, well, as you say, you know, the survey doesn't really mean that much. I don't know how accurate it'll be, but in a year's time, I'd like to know what the situation is out there. I've got a feeling that 20% will definitely be a lot more.
Okay, well, I think that's actually it for the news this week, Munir.
Excellent. Well, it's been great talking to you again, mate.
That was ZDNet Australia's Munir Kataria rounding out this week's news. We'll be right back after this short break.
Over 60% of information theft is now committed via lost or stolen computers. Can you measure the real cost of lost corporate data? Protect your invaluable assets with Checkpoint's PointSec data security. Find out more at checkpoint.com.
Unless you've been hiding in a cave in the Tora Bora region of Afghanistan, then you will have heard that Apple's latest operating system, Leopard, has been released. Now, before it came out, Apple touted its 300 new features, many of them associated with security, and it all sounded great. Sandboxing, address space layout randomization, which you'll hear me repeatedly and incorrectly refer to as address space library randomization, sorry about that, and a better firewall were all hailed by the company as some nice new features to make the new OS rock solid. Now, it was all grand in theory, but it turns out Leopard is actually a big pussycat. The firewall doesn't work, it's switched off by default, the sandboxing is ineffective, the secure guest accounts are anything but, and so on and so forth. If that wasn't bad enough, this week also saw the birth of the first OS X targeted Trojan in the wild. This has all slammed a company that has heavily advertised its products as being more secure than Windows. Let's have a listen to one of the company's recent ads.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I am no one.
Okay, PC, what do you...
Listen, friend, it's not very safe for me right now, you understand? There's a lot of spyware out there. It sneaks into your system, follows you wherever you may go. In fact, take these.
No.
They'll keep you safe.
PC, honestly, I don't need them. Really, I'm good. I run Mac OS X, so I don't have to worry about your spyware and viruses. You take them.
Yeah, you're right. I probably should have a backup anyway.
Yeah.
You never saw me. Never saw who? Me, PC.
Oh! Ah.
Well, it seems those ads could be looking a little shaky in the future. Now, Apple doesn't like talking to the press, especially about its product security. So I rang up my old buddy, Matthew J.C. Powell, who's the editor of Australian Macworld, for his take on this latest release of the operating system. And despite being an Apple devotee, Matthew is not exactly happy about the new security posture of his favorite OS.
In Leopard, you have to go in, you have to activate the firewall, then you have to click on Advanced, and then you have to activate Stealth Mode. And this is not something that people are going to automatically do, and yet it's something that should be happening.
Well, I suppose in addition to the firewall being switched off by default, there was some research done by Hayes Security, which found that... Even
with it on and even in stealth mode, there's still ports open.
Yeah, now what's with that?
It's a badly implemented firewall, clearly. You can even check this out yourself. Go to Symantec.com. They have an online security check. Activate your own firewall in Leopard, turn on stealth mode, and then run the Symantec security check. You'll find that a ping gives a response. It shouldn't do that.
No, it shouldn't.
this is quick and easy security check you can do at home. Can Symantec ping you? If they can, then something is wrong. Well, on every machine I've tried it on, Symantec can ping me, even in stealth mode, and that's not good. That's not good. Something needs to be adjusted in a 10.5.1 pack real fast.
Yeah, now, it wasn't just problems with the firewall. There was the much-touted library randomization stuff. Now, Microsoft built this into Vista, and it's called, address space library randomization, which is really about putting stuff into memory randomly when the operating system loads, so that if someone finds an exploit in a particular bit of code, they don't know they don't know what memory offset to use, right?
Yeah, which is clever, but of course in Leopard not everything is randomized. The dynamic link libraries, for instance, are not randomized, which means that's potentially a vulnerability.
Yeah. I mean, if there are vulnerabilities in that particular part of the OS, they can still be exploited as easily as ever. Now, I mean, it just seems like they had a really great idea and then just completely bollocksed up the implementation.
It does seem that way. It seems like probably to get the OS out by the October deadline, the self-imposed October deadline, they've cut a corner or two that should not have been cut.
Yeah, well, this is what I was...
I think people would rather have a, you know, rock-solid, secure, locked up like Fort Knox Mac OS X than, you know, have it delivered at the end of October as Steve Jobs promised.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you. How much of this corner cutting do you attribute to the October deadline for having the thing shipped?
Look, it's hard to know on each specific case. It's very apparent from what I understand from speaking to some developers that, you know, one much touted feature in Leopard, namely being able to use Time Machine on a disk that's shared over Airport Extreme, being able to use the air disks as Time Machine backups was pushed heavily on Apple's website up until maybe 3 weeks before Leopard shipped. And then it's not there in the final shipping version. And from what I understand, the build right before, you know, release candidate had that feature in it, and then it's not there in the final.
Yeah.
So I suspect that in just the last few weeks before the thing shipped, you know, they were dropping features that they couldn't quite implement properly.
It's
hard to say, you know, exactly which features were affected by that and which weren't, but it looks like, you know, some security features were overlooked.
Sandboxing was also touted as a big-time feature for the operating system, and yet when it came along, there's already been some criticisms leveled at it, saying that it's a completely half-assed job. And if you download something that you sandbox through this thing called Quick Look, which has been introduced into the operating system, it won't even stop it from dropping a Trojan somewhere else, and then that Trojan can have access to the internet. So that's another feature.
Unfortunately, what they've done with the sandboxing is that they've implemented the sandboxing in a very, very limited way, so that it affects a very, very limited subset of Apple's own applications. So it's, you know, it's far from letting, you know, anything that you run run in its own protected memory space. It's letting only a few things be sandboxed, and yeah, as you say, that by necessity, it's going to leave doors open.
Yeah, and we've also got signed applications. That's another feature that's been slammed. I mean, there's some of them that have been given the tick, but generally, I mean, it's proved to be a real disappointment. I mean, how do you handle that? I mean, being someone who is up to their ears all the time in Apple software, and obviously, you know, an Apple devotee, were you really disappointed by this?
Perhaps not so much disappointed as very surprised. Just given the degree to which Apple sort of dines on its reputation for a secure operating system, and given the extent to which Apple pokes fun at Microsoft for holes in XP and then holes in Vista and security problems that Microsoft has, it surprises me that a greater emphasis on ensuring that all of these security features were working wasn't given. I was surprised to find that, well, that there are any flaws, but that there are the kind of flaws and the size of flaws that there are is really very surprising. Because, of course, you know, I've then got to turn around and tell all my readers, no, your system is not nearly as secure as you think it is, not nearly as secure even as Apple claimed it would be, and here's all this stuff that you have to do to try and protect yourself a little bit better.
Well, the other bit of Apple-related news that we had over the last week is that there's been a Trojan discovered, which, you know, it looks like basically to get infected with this thing, you pretty much have to download it and install it yourself. But it's not so much of a problem as it is now. But, I mean, you can imagine in the future that Trojan, you know, you might find it installing itself through some sort of exploit in Safari or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, what basically has to happen, it's exploiting, it's almost a kind of social engineering one. You go to a porno website, you download a movie, the movie says, sorry, I can't run in QuickTime Player because you don't have the appropriate codecs. Do you want me to install the appropriate codecs? You click OK, and what you're actually installing is this Trojan, known as osx.rsplug.a. And what it does is it mucks up your DNS table so that when you go to legitimate websites, it redirects you to phishing websites, fake websites. And you can't tell that you've gone to a fake website because, as far as the browser knows, this is a legitimate, you know, proxy to that website because it's mucked up your DNS table. The other thing it does is it installs a cron schedule. I suppose your listeners will know what a cron job is. And that runs its itself every 60 seconds to reinstall the Trojan just in case you've removed it.
Yeah.
So you have to not only remove the Trojan itself, which is a fairly straightforward thing to do, but you then have to remove the cron job from your cron table, which actually requires a little bit of Unix fiddling. So it's not something that's straightforward for the average OS X user to do.
Mm.
Intego, which is the company that came out with the news that the Trojan had been found in the wild, they've updated Virus Barrier. So Virus Barrier removes it, and Sophos Antivirus is able to remove it. So, the security companies are, responding in a timely manner to it. But the fact that a bit of genuine malware has been found in the wild for OS X, it's not a genuine virus. It doesn't replicate itself. You do have to actively install it, but it's genuine. It's genuinely malicious. It can really do damage to your machine. And that on top of the sort of firewall and other security criticisms of Leopard it's not been a very good week for Apple security-wise.
No, it hasn't. And I guess we've really noticed over the last, particularly over the last 18 months, there was originally the discussion was around Apple bugs, finding vulnerabilities in Apple. And everyone was like, oh, don't worry, it's 10 times more secure. You won't find anything. And then, of course, there was the month of Apple bugs and we saw heaps of bugs. And then everyone said, well...
A lot of those, though, were Unix bugs that weren't necessarily sort of Apple's fault.
Oh, there was a lot in things like preview for loading PDFs. There was stuff in the way it mounts disk images with DMG. There were Safari bugs. I mean, there were a lot of bugs. Matthew, there was a bunch of them, but I guess the mitigating factor was even if you exploited this bug, then what? I mean, unless you were manually hacking this thing, then it didn't really matter. Then now what we've seen is that there is actually something that people can drop onto your system through a vulnerability. So while this Trojan now is being installed manually by the user, that might not be the case in 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Somebody will find a way to make this thing able to install itself.
Do you think we are entering a new phase in the industry where Apple's might be about to enter the hell that has been Windows land for the last 5 years?
I think it's a possibility. The kind of look at me, I hacked OS X, hacking for sort of glory, I think those days have long since passed. What people are trying to do these days is exploit vulnerabilities for the sake of profit. And OS X, as it gains in market share, is becoming a more attractive target for that. Before very long, certainly this OS X RS Plug A Trojan horse, it's obviously designed to enable phishing attacks. Which are, for profit attacks. It's clearly designed with exactly that in mind. So yeah, OS X is becoming a more attractive target, and the bad guys are taking some notice.
Now, I should also mention, Matthew, that Apple doesn't discuss these sorts of issues with the media, do they?
No, they don't. Apple is not very good at acknowledging problems with its operating system. Not very good, particularly with security problems. I think. In terms of communicating with the media and communicating with its customers, Apple is probably where Microsoft was, 5 years ago. Just in terms of trying to pretend that there aren't problems until they've found a solution. And, by then the problem has been well and truly exploited. Apple needs to learn Microsoft's lesson. Don't pretend there isn't a problem. Come out with it, come clean, and the solution will come along much faster if your customers are on the lookout for a solution rather than unaware of the problem.
Okay, well, Matthew, thank you very much for stepping in to fill the void left by Apple's lack of interviews on this topic, mate. We really appreciate you coming onto the show to discuss this.
That's not a problem. My readers are Apple's customers, and if Apple's not going to tell them that there's a problem to look out for, well, I have to step in, don't I?
Matthew J.C. Powell there from Australian Macworld magazine with the skinny on Apple's latest operating system, Leopard. It's time now for this week's sponsor interview. This podcast is sponsored by Verizon Business Security Solutions, formerly CyberTrust. So each week we have one of their staff on the show to discuss an issue or trend. And this week we've gone global. Henry Ng, the company's Hong Kong-based Director of Professional Services for the Asian region, chatted to us by phone. Now, his job isn't easy, he says, because Asian enterprises seem obsessed with using software or hardware point solutions to solve their security problems, even when it's not appropriate. They don't like spending up on services, he says, and it's causing the Asian enterprise some problems.
Yeah, well, a lot of customers, you know, when I go and meet with them and talk to them about security solutions, they would just tell me that, you know, this is the product that they want, this is the software that they want. But as a matter of fact, as we discuss further, a lot of the problems are related to processes or the staff's awarenesses. So I think there's still a strong focus here in Asia that the customers rely on spending money to purchase security products, hopefully to solve their solutions or hopefully to solve their problems.
So why is it, do you think, that approach is taken in the Asian market as opposed to other places like Australia and Europe and the US?
I think it might be a cultural thing that a lot of Asian customers, they like to see things, they like to buy something that they can see, they can feel. Surface is something quite intangible to them.
Mm.
And they're not really used to spending money in the consulting side or acquiring services. Things are actually getting better and better as time moves on. But still, some of the customers, they still have this product-centric mindset.
And which Asian markets specifically are we talking about? Are we talking about China or South Asia or, you know, Southeast Asia?
Yeah, well, my coverage is almost the whole Asia except Australia. So I have seen customers in China, in Taiwan, Hong Kong, Southeast Asia, such as Singapore and Malaysia. Singapore and Hong Kong is a bit better. The security mindset of the customers, they have a pretty good balance between products and services. But for other Asian countries, like the ones that I just said, they still heavily rely on products to solve their problems.
Right. And are the vendors, I suppose the software vendors, would think of this as being a rather handy situation?
Well, I'm not saying that they shouldn't buy products. It's just that products do not always solve all their security headaches. Sometimes I've seen some customers spending money, for instance, to buy a security event management tool, and they don't really have the right processes or procedures how to operate it. So they have the tool here. They can actually do a bit of event correlations, but how to make use of the tool to be in line with their incident management process, for instance, they have no idea.
So I guess you're finding it a little bit challenging selling, you know, pure services into the region.
Yeah, absolutely. This is actually quite a bit of challenge for us to tell them that you not only do you need the right software or hardware solution, you also need to pay attention to the processes and people side, which ultimately means consulting services.
Yeah. And I imagine the software vendors are really encouraging the mindset that their products can cure all of the problems faced by organizations. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's a sales tactics. They might be doing some sort of demos or highlighting some of the features. And sometimes the customers will be quite happy and they think, this is the one. This is the one that can help us. But quite a lot of times they buy the product, they don't really know how to use it, so it's not really having a good return on investment.
Well, I suppose that's almost a limitation in security products themselves, because you'd think it would be nice to get to the day where you could buy security software that would solve specific problems.
Yes, I mean, to solve security problems for sure, you need to automate some of the processes. Yeah, that's where products are come in handy. To automate some of the processes so that you don't have to use a lot of manual methods. But besides that, you still need to know how to use it properly and align with your business strategies.
Okay, so what are you going to be doing to try to counter the mentality over there that services are a waste of money?
That's a very good point. So sometimes when I go to meet the customers, we'll try to discuss what are the real issues that you are facing. instead of just, sometimes they would just say that, oh, I need a point product. Do you have one in your organization? Or I need a solution. Do you recommend a specific brand name? Well, let's discuss what are the real issues. A recent meeting that I had with a Taiwanese customer, as soon as we sat down, they told me like 5 or 6 security issues. After analyzing these issues with them, a lot of them are actually related to the staff awareness.
Mm.
You can buy a lot of products, but it would not be as effective if you raise the security awareness of people. That could be as effective as spending millions of dollars on the product side. So once we've analyzed that, I told them that, well, you may want to actually start to do a lot more education, teaching the staff how to operate their systems, how to operate their laptops in a secure manner. And they agreed with me. We tried to pitch this message to our customers that they should balance between the services and products.
I think I have a better idea, Henry. You could start taking professional services and selling them in shrink-wrapped cardboard boxes.
Well, I think our aim is to help them, is to help our customers to mitigate their security risks or to solve their security problems. So it could be from the services side or it could be from the software side. Important thing is don't overlook one or the other.
That's all we've got time for at the moment, mate, but thank you very much for coming on the show this week.
Sure. Thank you very much, Patrick.
That was Henry Ng there with this week's sponsor interview, rounding out this week's edition of Risky Business. Until next week, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.